From the bizarre world of the paranormal to the sinister secrets of the U.S. government, the Black Vault has become known worldwide as the premier spot for anything and everything conspiracy. Now, join me, John Greenwald Jr., as we dive into the research together in hopes to decipher these mysteries. This is the Black Vault Radio. That's right, this is the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., in kind of a silly mood this week. I don't know why. Something in the water over here in Los Angeles. Kind of feels like earthquake weather. I don't know, I should timestamp this thing. I'd make a lot of money for myself if I'm actually correct in saying that there's an earthquake in California. Like, that's a big leap to make. I don't know, whatever. Hey, we've got a great show for you this Tuesday on the Black Vault Radio. Geraldine Stith, author of The Alien Legacy, is joining me. She's on the line, going to be on in just a couple of minutes. She's talking about a case that has been known as the Kelly Greenman case, but it's also got about 16 different titles. Now, this is a case that really doesn't have a ton of supporting physical evidence, but I want to bring up a quote that I first learned from Stanton Friedman, who I believe got it from Dr. Carl Sagan. Absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. And I believe that this is a true example of that very quote. It's a great quote. And this case, August 21st, 1955, multiple beings were seen on this farm property. And I don't want to blow the story for you, but it's a pretty amazing tale. Geraldine's going to be joining us right here on BVRN telling us the story. Now, before we start with Geraldine, though, I've got a couple things to talk about. First and foremost, for those of you who have been keeping tabs on the Black Vault Encyclopedia Project, we're growing by leaps and bounds, and there are tons of UFO case files being contributed from across the globe, primarily from the Mutual UFO Network, along with the UFO Casebook, two organizations and websites that you better be familiar with, MUFON.com and UFOCasebook.com. But also I'm getting a lot of video and photograph submissions from Black Vault users across the world and people that want to host their video and photograph. Now, tons, and that's an understatement, tons, go check it out, of UFO case files have been added. But one in particular is very intriguing and is a kind of a hot topic on the Black Vault message forums. Now, for those of you who do frequent the message forums, you're probably familiar with one of our frequent members, Bluesman, a.k.a. Larry, who has been involved in investigating what has been called the Bob White encounter on the forums. Now, Larry, I love Larry. He's been a friend of mine for many years. I met him through the Black Vault because he was doing research on this mysterious object that a UFO witness, Bob White, had found after a UFO encounter. There's no other way to put it. He recovered this object. He has a physical piece to put in front of you, to hand to you, to touch it, to hold it. And he'll let you do that. I guess that kind of sounds creepy, but the UFO piece, I've held it, and it's an amazing piece. It really is. I don't know what it is. I don't boast to know what it is. I don't know a lot of things, but I will say that when you see this thing, it's pretty amazing. It's kind of one of a kind, and to try and create this thing would be impossible. Anyway, there's a case file on there. Go check it out. It's from Georgia, and it happened in November of 2006. You'll see it on the recent changes page right now, or go into the UFO case file database. Go under G, Georgia, November 2006. Go check it out, because there's an object now from a totally unrelated UFO encounter than the Bob White case that looks incredibly similar. Now, I don't know what Bob's interpretation of this is or what Larry's is, but it's a hotbed topic on the Black Vault message forum. So I throw it out to you to go check it out, see what you think. www.theblackvault.com. Click on an encyclopedia. Let me know what you think. All right, Geraldine Stiff coming up on the Kelly Greenman case. We'll be right back.
Oh, no.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. My guest waiting patiently on the phone, Geraldine Stith. Geraldine, thank you so much for joining me here on the Black Vault Radio.
Well, thanks, John, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime. Well, I learned about your new book, and it very much intrigued me because I'm always interested in new information coming out in the UFO field, and whether it's about research, hard evidence, or case files. And I was not aware of your I shouldn't say your encounter, but the encounter known as, there's a couple different names that I found for it, the Kelly Hopkinsville encounter. I've heard it called the Hopkinsville Goblins case. Yeah, what do you call it?
It's the Little Green Men from Kelly.
The Little Green Men.
The Kelly Green Men.
The Kelly Green Men. See, even you've got a couple titles for it.
Oh, yeah. It's been called several things.
Well, the most important title, though, is The Alien Legacy, the title of your new book coming out very shortly, or is it out already?
Already out.
Fantastic. Well, let me go ahead and pass it to you. Tell me a little bit about what this case is and what's your involvement.
Well, it's a fascinating little story. How I got involved is it's my family. It happened to my dad, my grandmother, some uncles and aunts. They were all together in this little farmhouse on a hot August evening in 1955. I guess you could say my dad was a very colorful character. He, at the time, was working with a carnival. He had been with it for years. And he had been in for the weekend with his wife and his friend Billy Ray Taylor and his wife June. And they had come in for the weekend. They had been out on the road with carnival. And they decided to come in and visit, and they were just at home one evening. Well, it happened on a Sunday evening, and the basis of the story is Billy Ray went out to the well to get some water. Of course, you know, this was an old country house, no running water. They did have electricity, but no water. So he went out to the well to get it, and while he was out there, it was just, you know, turning dusk, you know, the sun going down, and he just happened to look up and seeing a silver object with, he called, all the colors of the rainbow falling behind it. And this terrified him. He went back in the house. He told them, and Billy Ray, being the prankster he was, my dad just laughed at him and said, you know, just go on, you know, you're just being silly, and we know you're trying to play a trick on us, and just laughed it off. Well, he kept on persisting, and finally the old hound dog outside started really having a fit and just all kinds of stuff, and my dad thought, well, you know what, maybe we ought to go take a look. So he and Billy Ray went out back to the well, and he had him show him exactly where he saw this. And so Billy Ray explained to him, you know, how it flew, what he saw, and you know, my dad tried to rationalize it out. It was hot. It was an exceptionally hot summer. They had been having meteor showers that month. And so, you know, he was trying to tell him it could have been, you know, several of anything it could have been, you know, just many things. And he's like, no. I know what all these things look like. It wasn't a bird. It wasn't, you know, anything he was trying to put it off, you know, as being. And they said, oh, you know, my dad said, okay, well, let's just go back to the house. So they just headed back to the house, and while they were walking to the house, you know, of course, they were out in the country. There was plenty of woods. Coming out of the back, from the back woods behind the house, was this little figure. Okay, it glowed. Okay, we're talking about my dad is a country boy. He knew how to shoot a rifle, shoot any kind of gun you put in his hand. You know, hunted all his life. Okay, the old hound dog, you know, runs under the house scared to death. Something's up. You know, old hound dog, if it's an animal of any kind, he's going to chase after it. My dad, you know, oh, something's not right. So they take off into the house. You know, of course, when they get in there, everybody's like, what are y'all doing? You know, y'all trying to play a trick on us. We know what you're trying to do, you know, and everybody just laughed it off. And my dad, being the serious man he was, and my grandmother took this into consideration. She knew how my dad was. And so she was kind of leery of the whole thing and just kind of just watched and kept quiet about it mostly, and while the others just joked on them. And, you know, they kept inside the house, and finally he just decided, you know, Billy Ray, you take this gun, I'm going to take this gun, and we're gonna keep an eye out.
So it sounds, not to interject, but it sounds like your dad and Billy Ray were convinced that this was not some guy trampling their farm, that this was obviously a being from...
It glowed.
I mean, yeah,
glowed.
There's the obvious tall tale reason.
Exactly. You know,
so now they're going to go out and hunt it.
Right.
Okay.
Three and a half foot tall, it glowed. It scared them. You know, what was it? And, you know, this is 1955. They didn't know what any of that kind of thing was. Mm-hmm. These were country people. They didn't get to go to town all the time and go to the movies or see things or know about these things. You know, sure, they were in the carnival, and sure, they did hear things, but this was different.
Okay.
You know, and it was three and a half foot tall, coming out of the woods, glowing. So they were in the house. All was, you know, the dog started barking again. And so, like I said, they decided to man the doors. One went to the front, one went to the back, one with a 22, one with a 12 gauge, and they were ready. Well, my grandmother's like, you know, this is getting a little too serious.
She still didn't believe it at this point, is that?
Well, she didn't believe it. She had lived out in the country for a long time. Nothing had ever bothered her before. You know, so what was it now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was what she was trying to rationalize. What could it be now? You know, she lived out there all this time without anything bothering them. And see, my uncle and aunt lived with her and took care of the farm. And I had two uncles and another aunt that were 12, 10, and 7. So, you know, they all lived in this farmhouse, and nothing had ever bothered them before. So she is trying to think, what could this be? Well, she got to find out.
How so?
Well, the next thing you know, well, she decides to go, you know, okay, we got to find out what's going on. So she just, you know, everybody's doing their own thing. So she goes to the back door where Billy Ray is. And she, you know, knowing my dad and how serious he was, she knew she wasn't going to get nothing out of him. So she went to Billy Ray, because Billy Ray, he'd have told her anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wanted to find out. So Billy Ray was going to be her answer. So she went back there, and she talked to Billy Ray, and they squatted down on the floor and was, you know, just back there just looking out the door waiting. And she's, you know, trying to grill him, trying to find out what this is. And Billy Ray's like, you know, Miss Glennie, you don't want to know. You don't want to see what we saw. And she's like, okay. So it's a little while passes, and the next thing you know, there it is.
It and she saw
up.
It.
Huh?
Was she there to see it this time?
Yes.
I see.
Seen it. She screamed.
Wow.
She fell to the floor. Of course, my dad hears her scream. He comes running to the back of the house. About that time, Billy Ray has already, you know, rang out a shot. And so that gets everybody's attention. And they all come running. And by this time, the little thing had done run off into the woods again. So, you know, they didn't see it. So they go back into the house. Billy Ray steps out onto the little porch, and the next thing you know, there's something, a hand coming down, well, a clawed hand coming down. Everybody sees it and touches his hair.
Coming down from where, so I have that correct?
The stoop over,
okay.
over the back porch.
That's
there
a little,
a little stoop.
Creepy.
And it was sitting on top of that. So it reached its hand down and touched his hair. About that time, June reaches out, grabs him, and pulls him in.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad runs out the back door, aims up to the roof, and shoots at it. Well, every time you shoot at him, you can hear it hit. It's like a tin bucket. They drop, roll, and take off.
So it's obvious that they're getting hit by, what was your dad shooting, the 12-gauge or the 22?
He was shooting the 12-gauge. Billy Ray had the 22. And then another uncle, Uncle J.C., he was in the house, he had a 20-gauge.
Mm-hmm.
He took up the 20-gauge when he found out what was going on. And so we had three, you know, good shotguns and rifles here.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they'd shoot one, it would drop and roll, take off into the woods.
With no effect. It was like the guns.
No effect.
No effect. Okay.
No effect.
All right.
No, they did this for about 3 hours. They got on the roof. They could hear them on the roof. Of course, the kids were small. They were terrified. You know, my grandmother, she didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was just really scary. And that's one thing that I'm trying to get across in my book about the effect it had on the family, because what they went through something that night. It's never been proven or disproven what they were.
Well, let me ask you, after 3 hours of, I was about to say firefight, but it didn't seem like the beings were attacking back, or am I wrong on that?
Exactly. They did not attack back.
Then what were they doing? I mean, were they just kind of...
That was one thing my grandmother was trying to get my dad to do. My dad, all he could see was he had to protect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That was him. That was his character. She was a really religious woman. She believed that whatever they were, they weren't there to hurt them, because they would walk up to the house and they would put their hands up in the air, like surrendering. They had no weapon on them. And so she tried to tell them, you know, we need to just leave them alone and they'll go away. Well, my dad wouldn't have any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just kept, you know, they seen them out in the big maple tree. They'd go out there and shoot it down and take off running. And like I said, they did this for 3 hours.
Was it their impression that this was the same being that they were shooting at, different beings?
My dad always said he thought it was probably 3, maybe 4 of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know in some of the articles you read, they say it was 10 or 12 of them. He never thought that. He thought they were shooting the same ones over and over.
And
that was one of the big things. You know, they were shooting, nothing was happening with mm-hmm. them, you know.
And his interpretation was that, again, if they were the same ones, was that 1 or 2, 3 or 4?
Right.
How many?
He thought, like the one he shot off the roof, you know, it rolled off, fell, and ran. The next thing you know, you see one coming around the side of the house. So he was thinking it was the same little creatures, you know. He'd shoot it, it'd drop and roll, then it'd come back.
Wow. Okay.
And,
so after 3 hours, did it just stop?
Well, they had a little silence, and so it was like, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take off, jump in the trucks, and we're going to run to Hopkinsville.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kelly is a little community about 5-7 miles outside of Hopkinsville,
mm-hmm.
the nearest town. So as soon as they had a clearing, they ran to the trucks, jumped in, and headed to Hopkinsville to get help.
And I think one of the biggest points that you're trying to make, and like you said, that you're trying to make in your book, is how the family felt. And what
right.
I'm taking away from the story is that's fear. Geraldine
right.
Stith, right here on the Black Vault Radio. Stay tuned. There's much more to this story, I'm sure of it, coming up right after this.
Fuck.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr. We're talking to Geraldine Stith about what has been known as many titles, but let's go with the Little Kelly Green Men. Did I have that? Or is it just Kelly Green Men, Geraldine?
Kelly Green Men.
The Kelly Green Men. I'll get it right eventually. But again, the most important title, The Alien Legacy, Geraldine's new book detailing this case. And if you want to check it out online, www.alienlegacy1955.com. Again, www.alienlegacy1955.com. Okay, so this is a pretty extraordinary story, Geraldine. And after about 3 hours of shooting whatever these beings are, your dad and family as well jump in the car going to the nearest town. I'm guessing maybe to go see the sheriff or a okay. What happened next?
They get to the sheriff's office. Of course, he's not there. The desk sergeant is just like, oh my gosh, you know, we've got a whole family here. He calls the sheriff, and he tells him, we have got a whole family here, and they are hysterical. Something has gone on at their farm, and they're scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
And the sheriff is like, I'll be right there. Just try to calm them down. So he heads there, and when he gets there, they're all standing outside waiting, and they're still hysterical. And he's like, just give me a minute, and we'll head out there. So mm-hmm. he gets on his radio, and he calls all of the area, police stations, everything, Fort Campbell, anything he can get a hold of to meet him out at this Kelly farm.
So he was convinced, and I think that's an important point to make.
Yes.
I mean, he wasn't taking this as some kind of a hoax or this family's drunk on moonshine or whatever other silly explanation.
No. If you read the book, it will tell you why he was convinced.
Okay. All right, so they're about ready to go out. Did he get a little army to go with him, or was he kind of alone in this?
No, there were several people that went. I don't know how many went from the police station,
mm-hmm.
but Fort Campbell came, some people from Fort Campbell. There was the Kentucky New Era, which is the local paper. They had a photographer come and some other people come, and it was several people. I mean, by the time they had gotten done and the news had gotten out, now we're talking about around 11 o'clock at night when they got to Hopkinsville, or a little after.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, by the time word got out, they had a whole community of people going out to this little farm. When they got out there, of course, it was quiet. There was nothing going on. They couldn't find anything. They walked around, looked everywhere. When they were going in there, now one of the police officers state that he could see a green glow on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see it from a distance, but when you would get up to where the area was, you couldn't find it.
Okay.
So that was kind of strange,
mm-hmm.
and there was a comment made that there was just a strangeness in the air. Nothing felt right. They investigated. They went in the house. Of course, nobody would go in the house. Everybody was terrified. So they went in the house and investigated. Of course, they were going to investigate it for any kind of alcohol or anything else, because of course that was the first thought.
Right.
Alcohol was involved. And, of course, a lot of people think there was alcohol involved that night. Well, there wasn't.
Now, I used to bartend, Geraldine. I know we don't know each other on a personal level, but currently I'm a television producer. Before that, I used to bartend. I've never heard of any mass hallucinations due to being drunk. I'll just throw that out there.
Right.
I don't think that would really be...
Not a whole family.
Exactly. Yeah, I know. Well, I kind of find 11... it silly that people will throw that accusation.
Yeah, we had 11 people there that night.
Mm-hmm.
We had 3 children, 12, 10, and 7. My grandmother, who was a highly religious person...
Mm-hmm.
Never drank a drop of anything in her life, you know, was totally against anything that harmed the body in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this was not allowed in the house. My mother, now she likes to call it over in the valley. She lived over in the valley, and she, you know, she said this story terrified them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was married to her first husband at the time, and she had seven small children of her own at the time. And, see, this is before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So, she said it was terrifying.
Yeah.
She said you would sit there at night and just wonder if they were going to come back.
I think terrifying is definitely the key word here. It's a very terrifying story. Geraldine Stith right here on the Black Vault Radio, bottom of the hour already. Stay tuned. Much more coming up. You're listening to BVRN, the Black Vault Radio Network. Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. I'm your host, John Greenwald Jr., talking to Geraldine Stith about... Oh boy, I'm gonna mess it up again. That title. It's the Kelly Green Men. Did I have it right?
That's perfect.
Oh, perfect. Well, good. The Kelly Green Men. New book coming out, that is out, called The Alien Legacy. AlienLegacy1955.com to check it out and place your order, because this is a... very fascinating story, but albeit terrifying for the family who is witnessing these mysterious beings. Now, they go into a neighboring town. They get the sheriff, who was convinced, and unfortunately we're incredibly short on time as the clock just whizzes by. So you will have to read The Alien Legacy to find out exactly why he was convinced. But Geraldine, please pick it up where they see this mysterious green glow. They can't figure out where it's coming from. As they get close, it just kind of disappears. Do they end up finding these beings? What happens next?
No, they didn't find anything. They couldn't find anything. They, you know, of course it was dark that night. They looked the best they could. They stayed out there a little while. And, it was about 3:30 that morning before they finally got in the house and got to bed. And then after this happened, they had another round of them. They came back.
But the police, or the sheriff, had left at that point?
Right. Everybody had left. It had gotten quiet. And, you know, that's something my daddy wondered. He wondered if they understood what they did.
Mm-hmm.
He wondered if they understood that they had went for help and they had came back and they had seen all these people. And did they possibly hide all this time until they left and came back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was part of it. My grandmother always thought that they were curious. That's why they were there, because they would come up to the doors and the windows and just look in. Okay, everything settled down at 3:30. Around right after she went to sleep, she woke up, and by golly, if they weren't there again. Peering in the window, looking at them again. So, of course, my dad got his gun, started shooting again, and they fought again. And it lasted until the sun come up.
Wow. Now, did they see him during the daylight? Did they look?
No, that was another thing, too, I state in my book. It seems like they didn't like the light. Bright lights, they would shy away from.
Okay.
So their reasoning was when the sun started coming up, they didn't like the light. They had big eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So the light hurt their eyes. That's what their rationalization was.
I see.
And so they left at sunrise.
Now, this wasn't... Now, you say that they had big eyes, so it's safe to say that by the eyewitness account, this wasn't just a light being, as some in unrelated cases would report. They actually had, like, a physical form. They could see eyeballs and...
Yes.
I mean, you would mention the claw that came down, but I just wanted to make sure that we're talking about, obviously, physical beings.
Yes.
Now,
you know, they looked different from the alien, you know, the little round alien head with the big eyes.
Mm-hmm.
These had ears.
Okay. Now, the reason I asked that question, and I'll throw this out there, and I don't want to miss any end part of your story, but what comes to mind is, were these beings floating, or were they leaving tracks? Did they leave physical prints behind?
They floated on top of the ground.
So nothing to see on the ground?
Right.
Okay.
See, that was a big thing. You know, this was tore apart because they couldn't find any physical evidence. But no physical evidence was taken either. There wasn't any kind of samples taken, nothing. There was an area. Now, see, this happened in 55. Back in 1968, my dad took us out there. See, we had never heard of this story. This was something that was kept from us.
Mm-hmm.
The older kids knew about it because they were born, but not my dad, the last kids, my dad's kids. They kept this hid from us, I guess because of the fear factor of it. And I was 8 years old when I heard this story. And after we heard it, my dad, I guess, thought, well, I'll just take you out there. We went out there, and I remember it to this day. There was a big, round place on the ground that was bare. It's not there now. It's starting to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember it. It was there. But see, no samples were taken. This was like pushed under the rug. It was like, you know, we're not going to fool with this.
Mm-hmm.
It was like hidden away.
Now, was there a police report created by the sheriff's department there in Hopkinsville?
Yes, I have the whole file.
I see. In the book as well?
Lucky. Huh?
In the book as well?
It's not in the book.
Not in the book, okay.
It's my file. I was lucky enough to meet a person that had the whole file for it. I had everything.
I see.
That they did for, you know, that at the time, the Blue Book, everything.
Now, did Blue Book do an official investigation in this?
They did, but they filed it away because there wasn't enough evidence.
Now, is this one of their considered unknowns? They have 701 cases that they said that there was just a lack of evidence.
Right, exactly. No evidence. They just put it away as a bunch of old country hillbillies. They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know what they were saying. You know.
See, I would think that if one or two people surfaced with a wild claim, fine, okay, file that away in some kind of other cabinet. But if 11 people, 11.
This was a family. A whole family
are seeing something, why not take it seriously?
Right.
Now, I've seen reference that Dr. J. Allen Hynek did some research or investigation or held this case in high regard.
Mm-hmm.
Did he pursue this actively, or did he just really consider it a valuable case?
I really don't know.
Okay, no problem. Well,
there's so many people that's gotten involved with this case,
mm-hmm.
and there's so many people that do believe it, you know, because of the credibility, mostly of the family. Because, you know, you've got an older woman there, you know, and you've got all these other people, and you've got these small children that witnessed something that night, that experienced something that night that can't be explained.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did put them away as, you know, sometimes my dad thought maybe they were goblins, maybe they were something from, you know, the devil, but no, I don't think it was. I really believe there are other things out here that we're not meant to really fool with or know about, and really I don't want to meet one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let them stay up there, you know, it's fine, you know, we can share the same space, just don't bother me.
Right.
Because it's just a scary thing. I just, you know, it took me a long time to face this fear myself after hearing the story when I was so little.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it happened because simply the way he talked about it and the way, you know, he believed in it himself.
Right.
And it affected them. It affected all of them in some way. You know, something happened that night. I always say this. Something happened that night.
Well,
you know, I had somebody tell me that came to one of my book signings
mm-hmm.
that he knew what it was. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm all ears. And he believes it was Fort Campbell. You know, my husband doesn't like me to talk about this. You know, he really believes it was. He believes that he was told that they were experimenting on things and that they had something that they could manipulate and make into forms.
So this is Fort Campbell.
Fort Campbell Army Base, which is mm-hmm. just down the road from Hopkins.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe they were. Maybe that's why it was swept under the rug like it was.
You know it's an interesting point. And this was 1955, and
right.
the U.S. military did do some fairly crazy experimentation
exactly.
around this time.
And they still do.
And they still do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would be kind of curious to hear of similar stories, you know, if there are. I mean, it sounds like this is a pretty unexplained encounter, and this is my personal opinion, not of one that has really kind of a secret military test explanation behind it.
Right.
And in my research for this show, because I wanted to have a little bit of a background while talking to you, I came across some research that was done into this on the Wikipedia site. Now, I usually don't use this as a fact-checking source
right.
for UFO material. And plain
right.
and simple, the editors on there just don't like UFO material. Plain and simple.
Right.
I started the Black Vault Encyclopedia Project that really aims to show UFO research in the light that it should, and I want to get your material on there as much as you want to put on there and profile this case, because I think it really deserves profiling. But what I did find interesting in this Wikipedia reference to this case is the fact that, one, nobody could explain it at all, but they do have a subheading for explanations. And Geraldine, if you'll flatter me by listening to both of them, because I think they're humorous, and I
okay.
think you might get a kick out of them.
Okay.
I don't know if you're aware of them or what, but after hearing this amazing story, and thank you for taking the time to tell us, we're not done with the show, by the way, but after hearing this amazing story, there's two bullet points here. Number one, this was published in Jerome Clark's book, Unexplained, 347 Strange Sightings, Incredible Occurrences, and Puzzling Physical Phenomena. That's the book. It says, in 1957, U.S. Air Force Major John E. Albert concluded that the Kelly Hopkinsville case was the result of the witnesses seeing a, quote, monkey painted with silver that escaped from a circus, and that Mrs. Lankford's, although we haven't talked about her, I'm not sure who that is.
That's her grandmother.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Mrs. Lankford's imagination had exaggerated the event. Isabel Davis, for one, rejected this explanation as not only entirely speculative but absurd. Quote, monkeys are hairy creatures, monkeys have long tails, monkeys are notorious chatterboxes, and monkeys struck by bullets bleed and die.
Okay.
I have to ask, this is obviously sourced in Wikipedia, so it's got to be published somewhere. What is your reaction to hearing somebody trying to say, oh, they saw a monkey painted silver?
Oh, I know it's one of them. I have all the theories in my book. There's monkeys, there's owls. Just all kinds of stuff.
That's what I do. I mean, to me, that's
cats. That's
laughable.
Yeah.
I mean, how could?
Yeah.
Where did that come from? I mean, help me out here. Why would a U.S. Air Force major say, "Oh, it's just a monkey painted
because
with silver"?
Because they're trying to sweep it under the rug.
I mean, that's such a. I don't want to say idiotic because I mean no disrespect.
That really shows their intelligence, you know. But hey, 20 gauge, 12 gauge.
Yeah, that doesn't sound
right.
Plus, you'd have a bunch of dead owls and feathers everywhere.
Any kind of body they said was out there, like the owl, the monkey, the cat, other people, they got hit.
Yeah, and you'd have blood or
feathers, fur, or anything.
Yeah, I think by the fact that the sheriff, the fact that the sheriff arrived on the scene, if they had a 3 hour whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
of shooting a 12 gauge, a 20 gauge, and a 22 rifle at something,
right.
You're gonna have blood, or if it was an owl, you're gonna have feathers. If it was a monkey, you're gonna have more blood. You're gonna have
right. Little
body parts all over the place. I mean, that's
exactly
all of those explanations can go out the window. What are you left with?
See, that's one of, that's, you know.
Is there another common explanation that you hear that just you can't believe people try and say it, and you, or is that pretty much the common explanation?
Well, there's another one, like there was a neighbor feud, you know, neighbors feuding, and they shot and killed one of the neighbors and buried them or something. Oh, whatever.
Wow.
You know, just crazy stuff like that. Just any kind of silly explanation they can bring up to just, like I said, sweep it under the rug and try to get rid of it. I really think they were trying to get rid of it. And they were just trying to think of anything they could. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
why you hear a lot of the time, you know, hey, moonshine.
Right.
They, no such a thing. They didn't have a moonshine still or anything out there. And, you know, it's, like I said, this is my grandmother. There were small children there.
Mm-hmm.
My daddy did not live there. You know, he was gone most of the time. The only ones that lived there was my Uncle J.C., you know, and his wife. And they worked the farm.
How long, I took from the latter part of the story that your father and family eventually moved away.
Yes.
How long
I'm
sorry?
It wasn't very long. It wasn't very long. My grandmother, well, it was scary. The kids were scared. So they sold the farm to some other family, and they moved to town. She moved to an apartment complex. Her and the three little ones did. So she was widowed. And so she took the little ones, moved to Hopkinsville in an apartment complex, and JC and Eileen got their own place, and they sold the farm.
Now, I don't want to put a spotlight on where you are, but are you, and you don't have to say, are you still close to that farm?
Yeah, I live about 26 to 30 miles away.
I
live in a neighboring town.
Have you ever gone back?
Yeah, we tried. My mom, bless her heart, she's 82 years old, and she tried to show us where it was, but it had been so long
mm-hmm.
that she had been there, and it has changed so much. She couldn't figure out where it was. Now, they had a festival, a 50-year festival, back in 2005.
For this event? For this event?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
It's
a big deal over there.
Oh, yeah, it was. It really was. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
But they had tours. And I wish I had went, but I hadn't made arrangements, and I didn't go. And I was so busy there at the festival because
mm-hmm.
I had people want to interview me. See, there's been two documentaries done on this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and just all kinds of things going on, and I really didn't have the time to take one of the tours. And I wish I had so I would have known for sure where it was. But, you know, it's... I don't know exactly. You know, I was there when I was 8 years old. That was the last.
Right. Now, how did you feel? I know you said you were kind of scared yourself after hearing this at the age of eight. But really, how did it change you at all? Or did you just kind of, wow, that's a scary story and lose sleep for
it? It terrified me. I was scared to death. Oh, gosh. Up till just a few years ago, I would walk around the house and close every curtain, shade, door, window, you know, everything, because I was afraid something was going to look in at me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it terrified me. And still to this day, and this will probably never go away, if we're out at night driving, I will keep my eyes on the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's up there. You see lights. You can't explain them all.
Mm-hmm.
We sit out here on our deck and watch the night lights. You can't explain all those lights in the sky.
Have you had a sighting since then?
I've had two experiences, but it's been a long time. I was in high school when I had both of them. So, yeah, I've seen things that can't be explained.
Sounds like a whole nother show in itself, or quite possibly another book for you.
I don't know. It's kind of spooky.
Geraldine Stith right here on the Black Vault Radio. We're almost out of time, but stay tuned. We got a few more minutes to wrap this up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Black Vault Radio. We're finishing up with Geraldine Stiff. Did this hour not just fly by? It was a phenomenal story. Very intriguing to me. Geraldine, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
For those listeners that are interested in this book, The Alien Legacy, I highly recommend it because this really is a very cool story. And you're getting it from a family member of those that went through the account, which is always a plus. This isn't a researcher who dedicated a few months to researching it and wrote a book about it. This is coming pretty much from the lion's mouth. www.alienlegacy1955.com. alienlegacy1955.com. Geraldine, we've only got a minute or two left, but I wanted to ask you, because this is a big thing in ufology, where if somebody comes out with a fantastic story, or they say, hey, look what happened to me, this is just absolutely amazing, they say it's for fame and fortune. The skeptics will say, oh, they want to make some money and they want to be famous. Did that happen to your family?
They didn't make one red penny off of this.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, they were ridiculed and just laughed at, and my daddy, oh my goodness, you just did not do that to him. You did not call him a liar. You did not, you know, he was too serious of a man. He believed in what he told, and that was just a fact.
Was he called a liar after this?
That was hard for him to accept.
Was he called a liar?
Yes. It was hard for him to accept, really, really hard, and I think that hurt him more than anything. Because it was so awful. I mean, people were just laughing at them and putting them down, and you know, they never made anything off of it. Didn't want to, you know, it was just something that happened that he wished hadn't happened.
Right.
It was just awful. It really was. And I tell that in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what they went through, because they went through some things that people don't realize they went through.
But here we are, you know, this happened on August 21st, 1955. We're now in October. Gosh, oh, that's scary. But we're already in October of 2007. And despite the skeptics, despite all the ridicule and the making fun of, nobody at the end of the day can tell you or anybody involved what really happened. It's
right.
Still a big fat question mark. I mean, again, here we are many, many decades later, and no one can say this is what truly happened.
Right, and it will stay that way because nobody knows.
Now,
the only ones that know are the ones that were there that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, The Alien Legacy is the book, www.alienlegacy1955.com. Now, I saw a link on your site, Geraldine. I'm going to put the spotlight on you about a movie preview. Is this coming out on the big screen, the small screen?
No.
Any
That's...
screen?
I wish. It would make a wonderful little movie.
Sounds like it.
No, what that is, it's a video. The guys that did my website for me, they're really great.
Mm-hmm.
They did a video for the book to help promote it. It's really good. I advise anybody to go on there and look at it. And I've got another book on there, too, I have written. And it's got a really good video with it also, plus a music video.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah, I advise everybody to go check them out. They're good.
Yeah, well, I ask about the movie because this is a pretty phenomenal story.
Yes, it is.
And it would definitely be a very cool movie.
Yes, it would.
Maybe.
The right person could do it. It would.
Maybe Steven Spielberg or Ron Howard, two of my favorite people in the whole world, are tuning in, and maybe they'll call you.
Well, you know, speaking of that, I heard that's where Steven Spielberg got his idea for E.T.
Really?
Well, that's what I heard. Now, I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know. You know, that's what I had heard.
Very interesting. Well, yes, Steve or Ron, if you're listening, give me a call, too. I'd love to hear from you. Again, www.alienlegacy1955.com. The Alien Legacy is the book. Make sure you order it. Great story, Geraldine. Thank you so much. I can't believe we're out of time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. And thank you all for tuning in to the Black Vault Radio. We'll see you next time.